One of the most outrageous sex scenes in Hollywood is in the film 9 1/2 Weeks, where Mickey Rourke slathers Kim Basinger on the floor of her kitchen with all kinds of sticky food in front of the open fridge. Some folks found it sexy, while others said, "Fo, que cochina, what a mess."
Whether you're having a romantic dinner before you dim all the lights, sweet darling, or splashing around in a tub full of banana pudding, food has always been strongly associated with sex. Today, we take a look at aphrodisiacs in food and sex. What's in your kitchen that will make your bedroom hot as an oven?
Plus, the one food that actually does something for sex.
A new survey says folks on gluten-free diets are getting more action in the bedroom.
Cake sitting is now not ready for primetime viewing.
And why big guys last longer in bed.
I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun. I like bread and butter. I like toast and jam. That's what my baby feeds me, 'cause I'm her loving man. Have you ever seen that film, that movie, 9 1/2 Weeks?
Yes. It was a huge big deal. It was like the 50 Shades of Grey of its time. People went bonkers because it dealt with sex in a way in film we hadn't really seen before.
It really blurred the lines between pornography and you know, a mainstream Hollywood film.
Yeah, and MasterChef, right?
And MasterChef. So Kim Basinger, I'm actually even aware what the plot of the movie is, but I saw it as a kid. Don't ask me how I snuck into an R-rated film.
It was on HBO for years, so maybe you saw it on HBO.
And we went in there, and I was like, this is going to be weird. And of course, they go into the scene where they've been having sex all night long. Mickey Rourke, before his face got all messed up from boxing, is making...
From boxing.
Boxing. What do you mean?
Well, I mean, it's plastic surgery, right?
Well, it was plastic surgery as a result of boxing,
oh,
yeah. Oh,
okay.
He basically said, "Oh, you think I'm pretty? Well, let me show you." Boom, 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 boom. So he's making breakfast for Kim Basinger, who has these beautiful collagen and enhanced lips that don't look weird. And she comes into the kitchen, and she's like, "What are you doing?" And he's like, "Oh, I'm fixing something really good for you." And the refrigerator doors open. Mm-hmm. And refrigerators are meant to make food cold.
Yes.
So she sits in front of it, and he just starts pulling shit out of the fridge. First, it starts with like a cherry tomato. And he's like, "Keep your eyes closed. I'm going to stick things in your mouth, and you're going to get a big surprise." I was like, "Oh, you mean he's going to stick his dick in her mouth eventually?"
It's coming, right?
It's coming. But first, it's a cherry tomato. And I got to say, you know, Kim Basinger, you are very crafty with your mouth.
Why?
She can just, she can do things with a throat and a mouth that I cannot do.
Well.
And I'm a seasoned hole.
What did she do to the cherry tomato?
She just like swallowed it like a cock and then just popped it out of her mouth like a ping pong ball. And you can see this in the movie.
She's like one of those people. She's like, "I'm not actually going to eat any of this food. I have to watch my weight." So it's just like, it can go in the mouth, but it's coming back out. Because, you know, when they do those food shows and whatnot, and people are always tasting things, they have little spit takes, you know, so they can spit that stuff out.
Are you saying the Great British Bake Off is a scam?
Well, when you do commercials and whatnot and you have to eat food, it's like you can't eat the whole thing because you're doing 30 takes and you're like, you can't eat all that food. It's just, you know.
I do remember Orson Welles when he did the wine commercial. Mm-hmm. He actually drank it all in between.
He got too wasted and they couldn't run the commercial.
He's like, "Parmesan wines are so wonderful. Oh, yeah, this is dumb, fantastic." And the actors are like, "Oh, God, what the hell is this?
What's going on?"
So Mickey Rourke starts, escalating the food that he's putting on top of her. Meanwhile, the door's wide open. So the lighting's really beautiful. The food photography is very luscious.
Everybody always looks so beautiful under refrigerator lighting, right?
Yeah. It does. They look good. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, he pulls out some honey. And at first, and she's, you know, she's like Miss Piggy. She just can't get enough of this food. She's like, nom, 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 gobbling it all up.
Yeah.
And he's just like, "Hey, lady, slow down. Save some for me, you know?" Mm-hmm. So he pulls up the honey and starts smearing it all over her knees. And she's like, "Oh, stop it. Oh, you're sticky, so crazy. Sticky. It's sticky. You're making me horny." And he takes the honey, and of course, then he proceeds to, you know, finger her with it.
Oh, well, it's antibacterial. Maybe he was thinking that maybe she had some bacterial vaginitis, or otherwise known as busted vagina.
BV syndrome.
BV syndrome.
Busted vagina. Mm-hmm. So I just thought that was a crazy scene. And then the music that they had, the song Bread and Butter playing mm-hmm. in the background, adds to the just demented nature of that scene mm-hmm. and just stuck with me.
Well, it was probably one of the most talked about movie scenes of that year.
Certainly.
People were just like, oh my God, did you see? And then of course I think because of that, maybe we saw an explosion of like edible panties or like mm-hmm. all sorts of food products that you can take into bed.
Edible honey dust.
Flavored lubes, flavored condoms.
Have you ever eaten any of these flavored fruit things that they sell in sex and adult novelty stores?
I have tasted some fruit panties. They're very much like those fruit roll-ups. Somebody had them and we're like, well, let's taste it. We're just like, well, I mean, if you had to, like in a ration pack on an island or something like that, you'd want to eat it. But, you know,
so it's not sold by Welch's.
No.
Hey, kids, put on some edible panties. Mm-hmm. It tastes like grape. what's the nutritional information for edible panties? I was like, I'll just have one, please.
Well, lots of gelatin. But, you know, so I think that it did spawn a little bit of a craze where people were like, let's experiment with food and whipped cream and doing that kind of stuff. Because, you know, I think for a lot of people, they didn't necessarily think about food and in that kind of sexual sense, like bring it into the bedroom before for a lot of people. Now, other people have, you know, because, you know, you have a romantic dinner, you feed somebody something and you get them relaxed and then, you know, you take them into the bedroom.
Who's Aphrodite in Greek mythology?
She's the goddess of love.
And she's the daughter of Venus.
No, Venus is the Roman version of Aphrodite.
Oh, Aphrodite. Yes. But she's the daughter of Zeus, then.
Probably, yes.
Yeah, she's and then her child is Hermaphroditus.
Yes, who she had with Hermes.
With Hermes, mm-hmm. and is both male and female.
Yes.
So in terms of, like, you know, gender ambiguity mm-hmm. And sexuality, in terms of Greco-Roman culture, mm-hmm. it's always been closely associated with
that. Well, you could have, like, an orgy, and so you could have sex, and you'd have food at the orgy, and you'd even have, like, a vomitorium, so you can go, you could fucking eat, and then go puke, and then... And then go back and fuck some more and eat some more.
Did the Greeks really, like, you know, make out with a mouthful of chocolate or honey or wine?
Well, chocolate's from the New World, so they wouldn't have access to that. No, but maybe some carob beans or something nasty like that.
Yeah. So throughout history, people have been very fascinated with mm-hmm. things that affect their sexual lives, their sexual experiences. And, you know, of course, when you think about aphrodisiacs, there's a undeniably long list of things that people swear by mm-hmm. turns them on in the bedroom. Mm-hmm. And I would say the number one thing that people associate with is chocolate.
Most definitely, yes.
Right? It's like, you know, chocolate is as good as orgasms.
Well, people say, like, when you eat chocolate, it releases the same kind of stuff into your blood system as, like, when you're falling in love, like a little bit of that, like that cuddle drug you get.
It sends out good endorphins. Mm-hmm. Is that really true?
Oh, yeah.
Or is that just wishful thinking?
I think it's really true, isn't it? There's science behind it.
I did some research mm-hmm. and found that... Sadly, there is no conclusive evidence that I found that science supports eating chocolate has an endorphin that is similar to sex as opposed to a popular mm-hmm. an endorphin of mm-hmm. eating something delicious mm-hmm. like that a positive experience is associated with chocolate, obviously, but mm-hmm. that your brain can't distinguish between sexual arousal mm-hmm. and pleasure of eating a food. But one French scholar mm-hmm. wanted to know, why do we think about chocolate and sex? Mm-hmm. And they did a poll of Parisians who love their chocolate.
Oui, oui.
And they found out that why we associate chocolate and sex so mm-hmm. much was that young people love to eat candy.
Uh-huh.
And for Parisians, when they grew up as adults, eating chocolate reminded them of their youthful days.
Back when they were horny.
Back when they were teenagers and in college and, you know, mm-hmm. when they were, chocolate bridged the age gap between, mm-hmm. You know, their senior years and their mm-hmm. youthful years. Mm-hmm. And so for foods, a lot of foods that they ate in their youthful days, they were easily associated mm-hmm. with sexuality.
Well, I did read one thing that says that, you know, dark chocolate, which is the chocolate that has the most amount of actual chocolate in it, that it's the micronutrients in it. So you have tryptophan, which is a building block of serotonin, and that's like, and serotonin will help you feel like more aroused. But also too, the chocolate helps your you know, increases blood flow in your body.
Sure.
And so if you're having, like, if your blood flow is good, because, you know, your penis, a lot of it, you know, is based on blood flow. It's the thing that gets it hard is blood flow. But also, too, the chocolate stimulates you and elevates your mood and gives you, like, an energy boost.
Sure.
So, you know, a big complaint for a lot of people, especially middle-aged people, are, like, they're always just like, I'm too tired to have sex.
You know, yeah, tell me about it.
I've got so much else going on. I would much rather just go to sleep than actually put the energy into getting off.
I want to know from our listeners, like, how many of you guys actually masturbate, not necessarily for pleasure, but as a sleep aid?
Well, isn't that kind of the same thing, isn't it?
Well, you know, it is the pleasure, but I mm-hmm. think, like, you know, like, masturbating in order to fall asleep mm-hmm. as opposed to just, like, enjoying mm-hmm. the pleasure of sex. Yeah. Like, you're like, I cannot fall asleep. I have to masturbate.
I think I'm sure there are a lot of people. I often find, too, is, like, sometimes the best orgasms you have is, like, when you're super, super tired and you're just like, I am just going to go in there and get off and go to bed and fall asleep.
What was that golf player that got into trouble? Like,
Dorf.
Tiger Woods.
What?
I love how the way you think. Tiger Woods.
Dorf is,
yeah,
right.
Of course. Tim Conway's horribly offensive character where he plays a little person on his knees.
On his knees. Well, you know, Tim Conway liked to be on his knees. What can I say?
So Tiger Woods, he was taking Ambien because mm-hmm. he found, you know, the
Ambien
sleep
sex.
To have sex mm-hmm. with his girlfriends mm-hmm. and stuff like that.
People do all sorts of crazy stuff when they're on Ambien.
Literally. Have you had, like, sex while you were, like, had, because we've taken Ambien and stuff. I've never done that. I just want to go to bed.
I only took one of those sleep aids like that once or no, twice. And I just don't feel they're not the right thing for me.
So there is a lot of research being put, not necessarily in a good way, into finding our relationship to food and sex and mm-hmm. our health, mm-hmm. because there's not a lot of money to be made from understanding how food affects our health. So this is stuff that the government has to fund, and there's not a lot of return on investment. We find out that, you know, a diet rich in cayenne pepper can lead to a longer, healthier life. Mm. Well, cayenne pepper doesn't cost anything. It's freely sold on a supermarket shelf. So, and there's no cayenne pepper lobby. There is an avocado lobby. But there is an avocado lobby. You see their ads and you're like, why do I need to be reminded to eat avocados? I'm going to eat avocado. Thank you.
So delicious.
There's an egg lobby. I'm like, what the fuck is that about? You know,
well, you have to protect your industry, right?
I guess the fact that we have to lobby the government and the public to remind them to eat foods that are obviously easy to find, mm-hmm. popular already, there's something
the
fucked
power
up
of advertising.
About it.
You have to advertise it or else people forget about it.
Yeah. If I forget to brush my teeth or breathe or drink water, I'll die. Thanks.
Listen,
breathing water, sleeping lobby.
He doesn't brush. He's like, I don't wash my hands. You know, you have to remind people to do these things.
Yeah, when he said that, everybody kind of started recoiling from him in the room.
He's a disgusting pig.
Fox News. Mm-hmm. So in terms of, like, the relationship between these chemicals that we find in food, these vitamins, these mm-hmm. nutrients, mm-hmm. these enzymes, and how they affect our bodies, there's a lot more research on them as extracts or supplements mm-hmm. because there's money to be made from that, but not consuming the foods directly. For example, we know that it was in 2005, a group of researchers presented a lecture on where they claimed they injected rats with aspartic acid mm-hmm. and N-methyl D-aspartate, two non-essential amino acids. And the rats had a favorable reaction to their sex drive. Mm. And so people then took that information and said, you know, well, then oysters and mussels, any kind of seafood that's rich in this kind of non-essential amino acid mm-hmm. is going to have a positive reaction, but there's just not enough evidence to say eating oysters is going to get you horny.
Well, because people have touted oysters for a long, long time as an aphrodisiac, probably for like centuries, I would imagine. And so it's interesting that some of the things that are in it, you're saying actually work on rats, but we're not sure because it's a whole food if it's the same effect. Now, I personally feel like oysters kind of get you in the mood because when you have it in your mouth, it kind of is like, you know...
Slurping.
You're slurping something up, but it's kind of, you know, it's vaginal in a certain sense, or, you know, it could be anal in a certain sense. It's kind of like soft and... slurpy.
I want people who reject the idea of associating femininity with seafood or the sea or fish. You know, the term that you, we've had guests on the show who are like very offensive hearing drag queens say, "Honey, I'm fishy, mama. You look so beautiful, mama. Fishy." You know, the Jesus fish symbol is a pagan symbol for the vagina. These were cultures that highly revered and respected the feminine in everything and in all of us. They worshipped women and they created this Jesus fish symbol to celebrate the female body and the female sexual organs because they were shaped like a fish. And so to then Christians took over it, but to try to disavow yourself from a very rich and beautiful past by saying that you don't want the feminine to be associated with a fish, I think is very, you're missing out on a lot of good stuff.
Well, what's happened is we've had a couple of drag queens, more than a couple of drag queens, to stand up there in front of, you know, mostly straight audiences and humiliate women and call them fish in a humiliating way. And so that's tainted the term for a lot of people. Now, I would love to be able to reclaim it.
It's not for me to reclaim.
It's not for me to reclaim, but it is something, you know, we do have to recognize. Instead of saying somebody's like, you know, just a fish, be like, girl, you're, you know, you're a goddess or something. Like, this is why we have the fish symbol. I don't, you know, whatever.
That's why I want people to remember that, you know, because we have to, we don't even have to reclaim the fish for women. We have to steal it back from Christians who stick it on stupid bumpers of cars, you know?
And putting feet on it and having it Darwin is not going to be enough.
You should just turn it vertically and write vagina on it. That's the way to do it.
That's the way to reclaim it, for sure.
Yeah, to remind people. In fact, there are t-shirts that have the Jesus fish symbol inverted vertically.
Right.
And then the little part where the tail comes together aligns with the sphincter.
Oh, hot.
It's two holes, honey.
That's hot. You got a bonus hole down there. The other thing, though, too, is like you also, you know, if you want fish to be used in the nice way, you have to really root out misogyny. And that's a hard issue for a lot of people.
Well, especially when misogyny is internalized. Just, you know, so we're talking about, like, you know, when we're talking about sexuality and food, it's sometimes really hard to separate this really complicated negative reaction we have with our bodies and with all kinds of sexuality. You know, one thing that there's a lot of misinformation out there because, you know, Oprah Winfrey, Dr. Oz, Cosmopolitan,
Fun. And,
I think we try to be very present as objective as we can. You know, this information is like, we don't really know. There's a lot of inconclusive information, but all those things that they tell you to stick in a smoothie. And I'm talking about like goji berries, acai
berries,
raw cacao, maca root. Everybody also associates with this stuff being great for your libido. And
well, they call maca root. They say it is the, you know, the Inca Viagra. So is there truth to it? I don't know. They say
you've taken it. Did you feel like a positive influence on you?
I feel like it has been good for my general health overall. I kind of have gone in phases of taking it and not taking it. Now, it comes from the cruciferous family, which is, you know, the same as broccoli, cabbage, cauliflower. And those things are, you know, they're very powerful for your health. You know, they say if you can increase the amount of broccoli and cabbage and whatnot in your diet, it's a very powerful anti-cancer. But they say with the macro, it has to do with the endocrine system. Like, it helps your endocrine system stay in balance. What that means to be in balance, I don't know.
But, you know, a healthy diet, exercising, sleeping right, stretching, balancing, meditating, all that stuff is going to help your sex life. We want to know, like, is there a pill that we can take right here, right now to get horny, to get a boner, to get our pussies wet, to, you know,
Viagra, right?
Viagra will do it.
One of those things. Well, you know, ginseng is a people have been using ginseng as a natural Viagra for years, and they say that they've done tests on it, and it does help with erectile tissue. And so
it helps repair it.
It helps repair erectile tissue. And you know, if you've had a long weekend pounding stuff with your meat hammer, it needs some repair down there. But also, too, you know, erectile tissue is found in the penis, but it's also found in our nipples, and that's why they get hard, and in the clitoris.
And worn out. ginger, ginseng, and garlic. Mm-hmm. Those three sort of roots are very important, or bulbs. Garlic's mm-hmm. a bulb. Are very great at actually turmeric, mm-hmm. and also there's a Thai root that's also very healthy for that, too, which escaped me. Galanga.
Which is like ginseng.
Ginger.
Yeah.
So all those kind of roots and bulbs that we eat, that we season Indian and Asian mm-hmm. food with, are actually very good for stimulating mm-hmm. your sexual and your general well-being. Mm-hmm. But one food that has been scientifically studied and demonstrated, you guys were wanting to know in the beginning, what is that one food?
Pineapple.
Eating pineapple is rich in bromelain mm-hmm. Enzymes and does affect the texture and taste of your jizz and vaginal juices as well.
Oh, really? So yeah. Now it's going to change the taste. Like, we had a guest on recently that said it literally tasted like pineapple, but I don't feel like you get the actual pineapple taste through it. It changes the taste a little bit, right?
Well, there's a lot of discussion on mm-hmm. saying like asparagus will do this, coffee will do this.
Yeah, but that's the urine.
So the urine is not going to be the same as the sexual lubricants your body or mm-hmm. the ejaculate that your body makes. Mm-hmm. But pineapple has been studied to do that. I would also argue that papaya, which works very similar, it's rich in digestive enzymes. Kiwis, bananas, sauerkraut, fermented cabbage, kefir, miso, and tempeh all would probably have a very similar approach because they're rich in digestive enzymes. The one food that is claimed to be rich in digestive enzymes and is not is soy sauce, because what we eat as soy sauce today isn't the real deal.
What?
Yeah. Did you know that?
No.
What so is real soy sauce? Soy sauce is really expensive and really hard to get. So what, you know, Kiko Man sells and what the average consumer gets is actually a sped up process for soy sauce. I would maybe look at something like tamari, which might be, it's a little bit more expensive, and that might actually have a positive influence on your cooter and your dick.
The science is still out.
Natural marshmallow. Did you hear about this?
From the swamp.
You can actually take that.
Yeah, marshmallow, for those that don't know, is an actual flower. The mallow is a flower, and it grows typically in like swampy areas, and it produces an excretion which is very much like a marshmallow. And so the marshmallows that we eat today is something that to kind of like remember what those things are.
Mm-hmm. And because it's a lubricant to some degree, it probably can help the body, you know, be better. But that is just like, you know, this is just mm-hmm. guessing right mm-hmm. now. Seafood, sushi, you know, you've seen naked women covered in sushi. Two things that Asian Japanese people swear by in terms of like as an aphrodisiac is sea urchin, uni. Mm. And fugu, toxic blowfish that can kill you if it's mm-hmm. not prepared properly. Mm.
The you know, the weird thing about, you know, sushi, I always kind of in many ways think of it, especially naked sushi, as something that was a modern kind of take on something like that. But they have been doing like body sushi since the time of the samurai. Could you imagine it?
So the samurai had their concubine, mm-hmm. the person that was probably... Yeah. You know, their sex slave covered in raw fish mm-hmm. as a way to get them horny to do the deed.
Well, Chef Mike Keenan says the naked sushi idea began during the samurai period in Japan. It was a subculture to the geishas. It would take place in a geisha's house as a celebration after a victorious battle. So they, you know, they'd go to battle, they'd come over, they'd want to be entertained. And so, you know, part of the geisha was to, you know, sing and dance and perform and not, you know, I'm sure some of them had arrangements where they had sex with them, but typically that wasn't like their known thing. And then they would, you know, lay out sushi for you on this beautifully naked woman. And you could eat from her.
Here in Chicago, the AIDS Foundation of Chicago every year has a World of Chocolate fundraiser. Mm. Mm. And one year, controversially, they had two very attractive naked men on a table covered in chocolate or d'oeuvres.
Have little bits and pieces that you could eat right off of them. And it was kind of chilly, though, too. I was like,
I actually interviewed the guy with on the microphone. I'm like, aren't you cold? And he's like, yeah. Mm. I'm worried I'm going to catch a cold. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, this is not a turn on.
Mm-hmm. And you know, when you look at like those ancient Greek vases and stuff, and they would have like these bags of bread. Those were sometimes called as like they had a word for them called bread dildos. So they don't know if they actually used these like bread as dildos or they just kind of referred to them as bread dildos because they were in the shape of dildos.
Well, yeah, I mean, certain Italian and Greco-Roman cultures like Pompeii, they were very fascinated with the shape of the penis. Mm. And a lot of these aphrodisiac foods, like eggplant, for example, they were attracted to them not necessarily because they did anything, but just because of the shape. Zucchini. Mm-hmm. You know, El Gran Zuccone was like somebody who had a big dick. It was a zucchini man.
And now we see with our emojis, a peach is a butt and his eggplant is a penis.
Those things, you know, go way back in time. Mm-hmm. You know, Call Me By Your Name, that scene where he's sticking his dick into the peach in honor of Peaches Christ, of course, is actually something that's been around for a long time. You look at Hieronymus Bosch, this really psychedelic Renaissance painter. He went from the Middle Ages to the Renaissance, and he painted like hell, and there's all these naked people like hugging fruit, and flowers are coming out of their ass, and all this really wonderful imagery. And part of that is just that, like, people had a very complicated idea with food that we don't have today. We go to the grocery store, buy it, and consume it. But back then, food was really hard to come by, and
it was treasured more.
It was treasured more, and also it was seen more as medicinal. You know, like fruits like watermelon and blueberries, I think are extremely healthy. I think watermelon is one of the healthiest fruits to eat. You cannot eat enough watermelon, in my opinion. And I think, like, you know, tragically, the watermelon's been associated as this racist symbol. And, you know, some academics and some people, I argue this too, is that the reason the watermelon is seen as a racist symbol is because it's so nutritious. It is intentionally meant to harm people, to make them self-conscious not to consume it. Because a watermelon is easy to grow. It is very rich in antioxidants. It's rich in nutrients. And why wouldn't you want to eat a watermelon?
And it's delicious.
And it's delicious.
You know, and you know, bringing food into the bedroom when you have sex can be pleasurable. But some of them are borderline ridiculous, especially when you think about Auntie Angel, who's she's Chicago based, right?
Yeah, and she's a viral star.
She's a viral star, and she came up with this technique where you cut a grapefruit in half and you stick a hole in it and you suck your boyfriend's dick using the grapefruit. And I just kind of find it hard to believe that anybody would want this, that anybody would enjoy this, that there's pleasure to be had in this whatsoever.
You know? I don't know, if you have a really hard dick and there's only so many ways you can sit and suck a dick. So, you know, sticking a grapefruit on it, why not? You know, it's like part of it is like the most important aphrodisiac is the human brain. It's the mind.
Yeah.
And so in the human mind can get tired through repetition. So if you're trying something new and it may be sticking a grapefruit on someone's dick. Now, the citric acid on the grapefruit, I imagine if you have a little cut from using your dick a lot, could irritate your skin and not be a pleasurable experience. So proceed with caution and have a bowl of warm water nearby or a shower they can run to if this is going to hurt you. What about the term Spanish fly that notoriously Bill Cosby talked about in his
comedy routine.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is. I'm not too familiar with it. I mean, I know they used to sell it in the back of like comic books when I was a kid and stuff. So I think you could be a kid and order a Spanish fly. I assumed it was like some kind of stuff that had a bunch of like cayenne pepper in it or something.
Well, in the past, Spanish fly has been a catch-all term for mood enhancing substances. The idea is that unlike Viagra that got your dick hard, or it, that it, it made women want to have sex. It made men want to have sex. And it's actually a real thing. It's the irritating extract of an emerald green beetle by the name Lita veriscatoria.
Ooh, Beetlejuice?
Beetlejuice. Literally, Beetlejuice is an aphrodisiac. And it goes back to the late 1600s. A Swiss physician by the name Theophile Bonnet wrote in his medical text that he knew two noblemen who took the drug internally and causing blistering that made its body bleed as it moved through them. One of the men took it to gratify a prostitute, and the other one took to gratify his new wife. Both men, unfortunately, died.
Oh, my God.
Dun, 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 dun. But the death wasn't just like, you know, they stopped breathing and fell asleep. The death came through apoplexy, strokes, convulsions, and bleeding from the genitals.
Oh, Jesus. You're bleeding from your dick?
Honey, people do all kinds of crazy things to get turned on, to get a little crazy, you know?
Well, it's like, you know, people, like, they kill rhinos for the to powder their horns so they can use that as an aphrodisiac. And to me, it's just like, God, dude, just take some Viagra Cialis or something, you know?
Rhinos, tigers, elephants, sharks, bears are all endangered species in their habitats that are being hunted to extinction because... Mm. Of the Asian market's demand for aphrodisiacs built from their bile, their nuts, their testicles, their horns, or whatever it is. One enterprising Asian chef has started doing things called imitation shark's fin soup.
Oh, yeah?
Because Asians,
is it made out of dolphin or something?
it's made out of gelatin, actually. Okay. Because I guess shark's fin soup, they take the shark's fin... And they cook it slowly, and I guess it's full of, it's very rich in cartilage. Mm-hmm. And so they make something that's very similar to it, but using animal products and serve it to people, and they don't know the difference. Because ultimately, it's in your head. Alcohol, you know, certainly like everybody's had a shot of whiskey or the term whiskey dick. Have you been with somebody?
So whiskey dick is one of those things. Like I always forget. Is it like you? It's like you get it up, but you can't come because you're too drunk to come. Right?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then there's also like, but the flip side of that is if you have too much to drink, you're not going to get it up
at all.
At all. So it's like, is that whiskey dick too? I don't know. I feel like the words are kind of like you don't know. You have to kind of define what whiskey dick is to you.
Pablo Picasso famously did these paintings of absinthe drinkers. And we associate absinthe with the hallucinogenic properties of wormwood extract in liqueurs. It was illegal in the United States for a while, and they suddenly made them legal again.
Oh, it's so terrible.
Absinthe. And we, you know, about 10, 15 years ago, we had a friend who started making it, and he was struck me as somebody who looked like one of those Picasso paintings.
A little strung out?
Strung out, a little crazy. I was like, why are you going to do this? It's like, oh, man, I want to get high.
Somebody emailed us a bottle.
Honey, it is still sitting in our liquor cabinet, a bottle of absinthe. It is disgusting.
Yeah, it's gross. And the illusions that they say gives you is like, I think those are overblown too, right? The
hallucinations.
Just, hallucinations. And it's basically, it's just liquor.
But one thing a lot of people don't talk about is that absinthe was very popular as an aphrodisiac. And people also believe that just a shot of absinthe got you horny. So when you visit places that were, you know, tourism places like New Orleans that were popular for sex work, absinthe went hand in hand. So a lot of brothels and bordellos would serve this to their customers as a way to sweeten the deal.
When you serve somebody something that tastes that bad, any kind of pussy you give them is going to be good. You know what I mean? You're like, well, at least it's not absinthe.
Listen, if you turn on by pussy, good pussy is pussy, you know? It's like...
Well, you know, and it's not even just the individual items. What you eat is like also like how much you eat can also change your lovemaking. And scientists compared the BMI, the body mass index, and sexual performance of over 100 men who were being treated for sexual dysfunction with 100 other men who had lasted longer in sex. And they found that men suffering from premature ejaculation were on the whole thinner and fitter than the better, you know, than their chubbier brethren. So the guys who had a bigger body mass could last longer in bed. And scientists feel that the reason reason for this is because of female hormones. So, because men with the extra body fat shows levels of female hormones in their body, and this kind of disrupts the body's natural, you know, male transmitters, chemicals, and slowed down them having an orgasm.
So to break it down, if you're a big guy, your body is higher in estrogen compounds. Yes. Estradiol is what they call it. And your desire, body, your male masculine desire to come really quickly is tempered by the estrogenic compounds in your body that are a result of being big.
Yeah.
So thick and juicy is not necessarily a bad thing. Ask Tom Goss. He knows.
Bears.
What about vegans and gluten-free diets? And all these people are like, honey, vegans do it better.
Well, Match.com did a survey, right? Singles in America survey. And they asked more than 5,000 singles about questions about their dating and sexual habits. And they found out that people have a gluten-free diet are the ones who are more getting laid than other people.
Is that? So you're eating basically like brownies made out of spelt flour, you're better at that?
Well, we're not 100% sure, but they say that, quote, people who have followed a gluten-free diet are 217% more likely to have had a date in the past year and 172% less likely to have had a dry spell that lasted two or more years. Those who reported they orgasm are 43% more likely to follow a gluten-free diet. Yeah. So,
you know why I think probably is the reason people who are on restricted diets tend to cook more and cultivate their well-being more. They have more resources and time to cook at home, to go shopping. And when you have that time to do those kind of things, you're also opening up your life to romance.
Well, the thing is like, you know, you might be cooking at home, you might be making better food or something, or like you're just not probably eating as much food. I don't know. So you have more room in your mouth for other things other than pasta. But also too, it could just be the things, you know, it could be just very random and not related at all. But it's just kind of interesting to see that.
One Valentine's Day, you did something very romantic for me.
Oh.
Do you remember what that was?
Which Valentine's Day?
We met early on, and I was late at work. I came home pretty late, and you had made a beautiful meal.
I did. I made you a pink meal. It was salmon with mashed potatoes. It had a little beets in it, I think. So it was pink. And then I also served beets. And then I also had like a pink sauce with it. So it was an all pink meal. And you were like 3 hours late. And I was so mad.
I'm so sorry. Like, where is you could have also just called. Well, we didn't have cell phones at the time.
Mm-hmm.
That was also part of the problem. That was like it was hard to reach people, you know?
You had to wait it out. Well, I think we still had those sex days. Anyway.
It was such a romantic thing. And I think, you know, you and I, and I think a lot of great couples, you know, the relationship is not just something that happens in the bedroom.
Mm-mm.
It doesn't happen at the one location or another. You know, I think people underestimate the ability for families and couples and friends to bond together by cooking and eating together. I think that's such an important thing to do just because it slows down your life. You know, if you're going to a diner, everybody's on their phones, they're not even talking to each other. But when you're in a kitchen making food together, you have to negotiate. You have to talk. You have to say, you know, I like to prepare this dish in this way, but I like to prepare it that way. And so you can compromise and all that. Compromising is something that is very healthy. You know, I found this thing on the internet that is being shared around, and I wanted to pass it on to you guys, that the best relationships are not found, they are built. So this guy met an elderly Hispanic lady at a bus stop in Albuquerque. They went back and forth in Spanish for a bit. He was a white guy who appeared not to speak Spanish. So she was pleasantly surprised. And the old Hispanic lady said, talked about her travel plans to go to her son's wedding. It's a really cute story involving him and his high school sweetheart finding each other long after being broken up. I had recently been dumped and I said something a bit mopey like, I wish I could find love like that someday. The old lady smiled, shook her head, and say, "Ay, bendito, chico. Love like that isn't just found, it's built. How many perfect decorated temples do you think my ancestors stumbled across in the forest of Tikal or Tenochtitlan? No. My ancestors found a good level spot, maybe some water nearby, and said, here, we can build something incredible here. Look for a clearing in the forest, young man, not a hidden city. For the best relationships are not found, they are built.
Mm-hmm. And you got to make space for them. You have to have the space in your life to create that relationship, right?
And I would say that, you know, in a lot of ways, the projects that Mark and I do that are so demanding on us are also part of our relationship. Mm. You know, it is such a thrill and a pleasure to do the show for now in our 15th season with you for so many years. I have one of the most brilliant, witty co-hosts.
Oh, thank you.
So charming. Ooh, beautiful voice.
Oh, you're so sweet to me.
And a golden smile that melts me. No matter how hot, you know, and it's frustrating. You know, we live in a world full of injustice. There's a lot of inequality. You know, a lot of the great ideas that are presented on the show, we see it, you know, got stolen wholesale by somebody else. And we never get credit sometimes. And it's and I get so frustrated. I just want to quit. And then I realize what amazing listeners we have. Mm-hmm. And that you, the listeners, are why we are still here.
Yeah. I got a letter from Pablo. Pablo made a donation. Right now we have a GoFundMe going on. It's GoFundMe.com/FeastOfFunComputer. We've reached our goal of $3,500, but we're doing a stretch goal to buy a couple of other equipments since, you know, we're on a roll. Because at this point in time, we have raised $3,700 from 45 people. Now, there are thousands of people that listen to the podcast, so we're just like, let's get to 4,500 so we don't have to worry about, like, you know, getting the microphone fixed. We can just go ahead and do it. We don't have to, like, scrimp and budget for that. And so...
The money we have raised just so far...
Just pays for the computer.
Is... It's not paying for the taxes of the computer. It is not paying for the warranty for the computer. You know, there's a lot of fees. And this is just like us to survive. So any amount of money, if you've already donated, if you can consider making a second donation or raising your donation, that would be incredible.
And so Pablo writes, "Dear Mark and Fausto, I write you after learning about your computer problems. It's sad to hear. As always in life, major expenditures happen when one least expects it. I hope my contribution can help get you to your goal sooner rather than later. I've been a longtime listener. I've grown into who I am with you from my mid-20s to now my mid-30s. You have brought such joy and entertainment through the years. I can't really picture a world without Feast of Fun. You share so much of yourselves and life with all your listeners. I thank you for all you do." Well, thank you, Pablo.
Pablo's a bartender in Puerto Rico.
Ooh, Pablo.
Vamos pa celebrar. Huepa.
Is he at a gay bar? I wonder. Where is he at?
Honey, when you're gay and you're a bartender and you're running the bar, it's a gay bar.
All right. You
know. That's what I'd say. It's like people ask me all that time. I was like, honey, I'm gay. This is a bar. It's a gay bar.
I love all the donations we've gotten from people. It's so wonderful. I especially love this anonymous person. I don't know who they are, but they've given like 3 or 4 different donations. It's a joke. Because their name is anonymous. But there's 3 or 4 donations.
Oh.
But I was just like, that's not funny at all.
I was like, who's that? What?
They have a list on the side. You're like, anonymous. So the joke is that they're all the same person, but
this anonymous person, they're amazing.
You know, I think some people, like, they listen to the show, but they do want a certain kind of anonymity. Cause you know, for a lot of privacy is that, you know, for a lot of people, Feast of Fun is their dirty little secrets.
Well, it's like clean water out of your faucet, honey. If you don't take care of it, it's not going to come out.
Right. So if you can help us out, I'd greatly appreciate it. You can do that at GoFundMe.com/FeastOfFunComputer. So cake sitting, you guys who have been with us for years have known that we've been like very into the act of sploshing, which is, you know, playing.
Cake sitting. Yeah. I thought you said Kickstarter.
No, cake sitting.
So cake sitting.
Cake sitting. And, you know, for a while there, we were trying to get listeners to sit on cakes and the Iraq war was going on. And we'd say, no cake she'll go on sat until we bring the troops home from Iraq.
It was a way to protest the war.
By the way,
that war is still happening. Yeah. So we were horribly unsuccessful.
Yes. And cake sitting didn't really catch off, or did it? Dun, dun, dun. So this past weekend on Saturday Night Live, is it Kenan? What's his
Kenan
name?
Kenan Thompson.
Kenan Thompson played
Leslie Jones. Played a mom and dad.
Yes, and they were out having dinner with their kids, and Halsey, who was the guest host or the guest star, sitting there, and he reveals, Kenan reveals that he has an OnlyFans, and in one of his things where he does is he sits on a cake.
Now, usually, like, in those kind of skits, mm-hmm. they usually say, like, you know, I'm crowdfunding as opposed to saying Kickstarter, mm-hmm. right? But the fact that they're using a brand name.
OnlyFans.
Only for fans. Or I think it's OnlyFans.
OnlyFans, yeah.
That means the porn website. The do-it-yourself porn website probably paid for that product placement in Saturday Night Live.
Really? You think so?
Let that sink in.
Is porn's that much money that they can afford Saturday Night Live?
They're swimming in money, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, everybody wants to see somebody sit on a cake.
Yeah. Do you want to do an OnlyFans and sit on cake?
Listen, this is the OnlyFans. I'm like, not more projects. Mm-hmm. Jesus Christ. I'm editing Cooking with Drag Queens. We're doing Feast of Fun. I'm like, people are like, you should be on RuPaul's Drag Race. I'm like, I'm trying to get on it, but, you know, it's like, it's tough. It's, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah, any costume designers out there, let us know. Write to us.
I would, listen, I'll take, I'm very easy to work with, you know. Mm-hmm. You just cut up a bed sheet, put a hole in it, and just throw it on top of me. Mm-hmm. And
call it art.
Call it art. Mm-hmm. I love it when designers work with me and stuff and mm-hmm. come up with really cool stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'll, you know, make sure
we have some ideas.
I
too.
Drop your name on the red carpet. This is bothering me. Like drag queens who get free dresses given them by designers don't mention their names.
They usually mention their names. They have some kind of agreement.
Half of the time they don't. And I'm just like, I get so mad about that. Cause I photograph these drag queens. I know they've not mentioned my name when they use the photos mm-hmm. that I take. And I'm like, bitch, do you think I'll ever take a picture again after I noticed that you were just like time and time again enjoying the fruits of our labor, but never saying thank you?
That doesn't happen as much as it used to now that people have cell phones and all these kinds of pictures. But early on in the podcasting days, sometimes like you would be the only person who has ever taken a picture of a person, and then you'd see that photo everywhere. But, you know, that's life.
Well, it's not about, you know, it's that's why I am awesome, and I will give you credit if you take my picture or send me a photo, because I understand what that feels like. I understand how frustrating it can be to collaborate with other people and not get that credit. And I want to make sure that as an artist myself, that I give that to other people. Mm-hmm. Don't you think that's important, Mark?
I think it's important. I do think it's important. It's important to credit people.
I just don't know how to encourage that into other people, and I'd love to hear from other people. How do we encourage other people to give credit where credit is due?
Well, I'm also one of those people, I feel like the rising tide raises all ships, but a lot of other people are just like, for my boat to float, I have to try and sink every other boat. And that's just, you know, it's not the way I want to think about anything in life.
She done already done had herses. Now it's my time to shine. Mm-hmm. And you know, and in a lot of ways it's like we are part of the amazing community, and we are here because of you guys. We are able to succeed because you guys decided to take a moment out of your busy day and pledge $5, $10, $20 mm-hmm. to help cover our equipment costs at Feast of Fun. It's really an honor to have anybody really caring about this program that we do. Mm-hmm. And when people listen and tune in, it's really a thrill for us as much as hopefully it is a thrill for you.
I love listening to the list. I love getting letters from listeners. Especially people that have listened to us for a very long time, or even new listeners, people who have discovered us, because there's always something new happening here.
So what you're saying is you like any kind of letter.
Any kind of letter. But, you know, one that's written from the heart. This is really something that, you know, we mean something to this person. This person means something to us.
You know? So in terms of wrapping up the food idea, you know, pineapple's going to do it. Everything else is kind of on the fence. Live healthy. Mm-hmm. Love hard. Mm-hmm. Build relationships. Don't think of them as something you discover. Think of them as something you build. And anything else that we can
just eat, drink, and be merry, because people are attracted to confidence and happiness.
Oh, you know, that's a sweet thing to say.
You know, it really is true. If you're just going to be a miserable mope, like, you know, you can sit around and eat a 5-gallon tub of ice cream and feel sorry for yourself. It's not the same as if you make like a chocolate sundae with somebody and celebrate life. you know?
Yeah, don't be that absinthe drinker in the Pablo Picasso, unless you're turned on by somebody whose skin is blue and is kind of hunched over the cocktail. So how do you seduce somebody with food? What are the foods that get your engine going? When you say, when you sit on the floor of the kitchen like Kim Basinger and says, Miss Piggy's hungry, feed her, feed her.
Oh, that is definitely not an aphrodisiac, feed her. That's
the human sure. centipede?
Cuttlefish it is.
Vanilla pudding or cuttlefish? I believe in you.
Yeah, we want to hear from you, listeners. Have you ever made a meal that got somebody so horny they just couldn't take it?
They smashed. Oh, talk about this one story. Like, yeah. You hooked up with this guy who was Thai, and he invited you over to his house for dinner. Yes. It was a romantic dinner.
It was Valentine's Day.
And what did he fix you?
He made me some a Thai dish. It was quite tasty. But then he served it to me while watching gangbang porn. It was a chick, and she was getting gangbanged up by I don't know how many guys, but they all had, like, you know how marathon runners have those numbers on them? And so they'd come over, they'd screw her, and then they'd rip the number off and then walk off stage or something. Like, it was nuts.
He was trying to appeal to your bisexuality.
Yeah. He was addicted to porn, the poor guy. But, you know.
It's like, it was really awkward when his parents came over for dinner.
Do you guys eat while watching porn? I want to know. Tell us. Leave a comment at feastofun.com. I also want to.
No judgments, you sickos.
No. I don't care how disgusting you are. We won't judge. I want to remind people, too, that the best way to support the show is to become a Plus member. And you can do that at feastofun.com/plus.
Or if you want to make a one-time donation, go to gofundme.com/feastofuncomputer. Or consider our fine assortment of fashion at our store, feastofun.com/store.
Goodbye, everyone.
Bye, everyone.